And the infield coach did that too. Yeah.
Go back.
Fighting this one off, a fly ball shallow right field, drops in for a hit. Pirates take the lead. Spencer Horowitz fights off the fastball, 95 miles an hour, an 0-2 pitch, and drops it into shallow right near the line. By the time McKinstry got to it, Hayes scoring easily, and on to third goes Kiner Falefa. Pirates lead 1-0. Here's a 1-2 pitch from Flaherty. And a fly ball toward the line in right field. Long run and drops in for a base hit. This will score a couple. Brian Reynolds delivers a two-run single to right, bringing home Kiner Falefa and Horowitz. McCutchen to third. Pirates lead 3-0 in the second inning. League swing and a miss. Struck him out 99 miles an hour. 132 strikeouts on the year for Skeen. 0-2. Bednar's pitch. Oh, he just froze him with a curveball for the strikeout and a raising of the Jolly Roger. David Bednar's save streak continues. And the Pirates shut out the Detroit Tigers as they raise this Jolly Roger on a Monday night and give Paul Skeens his fifth win of the year.
First win in a long time for Paul Skeens. He didn't exactly get a lot of run support, three runs. But when he's pitching, that's normally more than enough. Although lately when he's out there, he gets one or two, and he's normally in a no-decision game. Good morning, everyone. Bob Pompiani in along with Austin Bechtel. Joe is somewhere probably playing golf, not sure. But we're here to talk to you today until 2 o'clock at 412-928-9370. Off the Top is presented by JP Roofing and Siding. Here's a rundown of what we have today's show. We're going to get into that Pirates game and also look ahead 10 days until the trade deadline. And that's going to be heating up, and I'm sure, Austin, you talked a lot about that yesterday, because the Pirates will be sellers. The question is, how much will they sell, what do they have to sell, and what will they get for the sale?
That was the first win for Paul Skeens, Bob, since May 28th.
That's what I mean.
May 28th.
And he's during that time, he's had like a 1.92 ERA in the games he's pitched.
Yeah, so we talked a little bit about Skeens yesterday, but mainly Mitch Keller. I had Noah Hiles on, and he said, I think Mitch Keller is going to get traded. He is the best pitcher available on the market. He seems pretty adamant. Now, there's other people that think otherwise, like Jason Mackey doesn't think Keller's going to go. But Noah, who's very plugged in, probably the most plugged in on the beat right now of anybody, he thinks Keller's going to go. So your fingers, Ben Charrington gets a decent return.
If you had someone in that GM role who was doing a good job with what he got in trade returns, I would be more optimistic that that could bring a haul.
Oh, no
doubt.
Should.
There are a lot of teams that are in the running here, and it's really a seller's market. When you look at all the teams that need one pitcher, man, there are like nine of them, and they're all in contention for something. So that should elevate the return. But since, you know, Ben Charrington has made trades before, and since we've had to look at those trades, we've seen that he has not gotten the best out of the deal, and he is oftentimes, you know, lacking in terms of what he got. They can't afford to be lacking in this deal. If they're going to trade Mitch Keller, and I don't know that I would do it right now because of what I just said, I still think they have 3 years. They could do this whole thing back again next year. You know, there's a lot of stuff they can do. He's an important part of the rotation. I just don't know what the result will look like, and I don't know if I trust him to make that result.
It's like those vendors, Bob, that go around and they sell T-shirts in like the parking lots before games, and they're like, $20 for a T-shirt, $20, and some guy comes up to him and says, I have $3. How could I get a T-shirt? And he says, okay. That's basically the deals that Ben Charrington has made. Accepting the $3 when he should be accepting what his players are actually valued at, like the Starling Marte trade. I think back to the Gerrit Cole trade when the old administration did that. All types of moves where they haven't been able to get key results.
And as a result, they don't have a lot in their system with regards to talent for offensive side of the plate. And that's a problem. It's been a problem all season long. So your gut will tell you that you want to trade him, or you're like I have apprehensions because of his track record.
Yeah, I would rather keep Keller, build around Keller, and trade Bednar Santana. I'd rather trade from a surplus in the bullpen. And like if I can move off of Ashcraft, if I could trade Burroughs, if somebody wants one of those guys because Chandler, Barco, Harrington can fill in for them, I would be okay with it. But Skeens and Keller, I like at the top of the rotation with Jones coming back next year and ideally what Chandler's going to become. But if the only way to acquire that big fish is dealing Mitch Keller, you just have to be okay with it. I'm just not with who's making the deal.
Well, we'll see. If Mitch Keller's not here, it better bring in a pretty good haul. And I say that knowing that there are so many teams out there interested. As far as last night is concerned, man, Skeen shows you all sorts of stuff. That is one of the best hitting teams the Detroit Tigers have in baseball. And they had a long night Sunday night. They were playing on Sunday Night Football down in Texas, had a fly. And the worst thing you want to see after a short night and get right back to it is Paul Skeens on the mound.
Yeah.
And he mixed his pitches beautifully. He rode his fastball to several swings and misses. And when he's on with that and when he locates it in the right spot, you know, you have to respect the other pitches that he has. You may expect them coming at some point, but they didn't come. He relied on that heater, and he really did heat him up.
It was the most swings and misses that Skeens had all season long on the fastball. And a lot of it is because he was elevating it. And Brault was talking about this on the postgame show yesterday with Jordy Mercer, and just the location of where he was able to blow it by hitters and even get chases outside of the zone. Because, I mean, Detroit has, what, 3 All-Stars in their lineup?
Yeah.
And Torkelson's and having a good season.
Riley Green can light it up. He's had a great season, followed by Torkelson. They got a lot of good players. The thing about their team is that they have a great farm system, too. At least it's rated highly. They have 2 other guys ready to come up here.
Yeah, Max Clarkson.
They're only going to get better, you would think. But they've done the right job with how they've acquired this talent, and that's the thing that's been lacking here. So, you know, I wouldn't. You know, I see this stuff about Cabrian Hayes that they went move him again. What would you get? I don't know that it's going to be anything big that would help you. You would remove his salary, which is, you know, modest actually, like $7 million a year. If they have to run away from $7 million a year, then they're in trouble. I would if I did this the right way. And if I did make a case to trade Mitch Keller, it would be this way. Okay, we'll trade him. He has 3 years left on a contract at a very reasonable price. I think any team would want that price. Fixed in, you don't have to worry about it for 3 more years. Therefore, I'm getting more because of that component of the trade all by itself. Then what he's been able to do with going into, you know, fifth and sixth innings almost every time he's out there and a very nice ERA, I would expect teams to give me a lot for that. That's that. If you're missing a starting pitcher at this juncture of the season and you have, you know, World Series aspirations, this is your time to make a move. So I would expect them to get a big haul, and then by saving the money, I would also expect, but of course it won't happen, that they'll go in the offseason and spend that money they saved in Mitch Keller and put it into good use for offense on top of what they already received.
Sure. I mean, we might just talk ourselves blue in the face until that actually happens.
I agree, but I mean, That's where they are.
So John Heyman put out there, I think this was Sunday morning, Yankees have been in regular contact with the Pirates, who have a few players interested for the Yankees. And he includes Hayes, Bednar, Santana, Keller, IKF. Can we interest you in all the above, apparently?
Yeah, just have a buy one, get 6 free. You know, just take whoever you want.
Who do you want back in return?
Well, I don't know. All
Stanton,
I know
is he coming back in return?
One on
with
one.
Six
what
guys?
Are you going to get for IKF, all due respect? What are you going to get for him? Not much. What are you going to get? You know, Santana's a good pitcher. I'd rather keep him here, to be honest. But I don't know what teams are like and what they're willing to give up. If it's not much, I'm not just going to make a whole bunch of trades just because and make it look like I'm doing something to try to help this team. It's got to be concrete offense. And if they don't get it, then they're going to have to find it in free agency, and I don't hold my breath.
So Joe and I had a big debate last week that when you trade Ke'Bryan Hayes, do you think you can actually get something for Ke'Bryan Hayes? Because I think if you trade him to a club like the Yankees, the Mets, the Dodgers, you know, someone like that, Cubs, they would be okay just taking that $7 million, where that might mean a lot to the Pirates, but it doesn't mean nearly as much to them.
Yeah, but what do you get in return? It's always going to come back to that.
I'd be fine. Basically, it's been treated as if trading Ke'Bryan Hayes is just a huge salary dump that you're going to have to attach other people to get rid of, like that Liriano contract. And with the defensive value, I just don't know if that's the case. I feel like you could probably get a bullpen arm, maybe somebody like the caliber of Isaac Madsen, that you could call up that might be in AAA or might be somebody that's had some big league experience but minimal and just needs another opportunity that could end up flourish with that chance. And they've done well at identifying bullpen arms.
Sure they have, but they haven't done well identifying offensive bats. And until that changes, it doesn't matter how many bullpen arms they have. And that's the whole problem here. They've miscalculated what they have in their system. If you trade Ke'Bryan Hayes, who's you going to put Triolo in his 190 batting average over? What are you going to do? I mean, at some point they have to figure out a way to get bats in this lineup. They just don't have enough, and until they get creative, they're not going to have enough. And I don't. Again, I'm not holding my breath on this trade deadline. It may be silent. Maybe they're going to get a point where they just say, "We don't, you know, we'll stand pat. Or maybe Bob Nutting will say, hey, I'm not trade. You're not going to trade Mitch Keller. He may interject some. Because I don't know if Ben Cherington is absolutely committed to next year here. Probably is at this point, and I think that's a mistake. But if that's how they're going to do it, then he may not have the latitude to make these kind of trades. Fan Twitter is brought to you by South Hills Kia and Peters Township. Visit them, southhillskia.net. The Fan Text Line is brought to you by Edgar Snyder and Associates, a personal injury law firm where they always say there's never a fee, and they get money for you. The Fan Hotline, presented by Sullivan Super Service, providing trusted plumbing and HVAC service for over 50 years. We want to invite you into this part of the conversation, of course, at 412-928-9370. That's the hotline number. What do you think will happen with Mitch Keller at 412-928-9370? Also, I want to talk about the Steelers because tomorrow it all starts. After all this talking we've done here, Austin, it finally actually goes to the field. Now, tomorrow won't be much other than reporting day. But, man, you talk about a team that has 1,000 storylines that I don't think many of us thought would happen back in April or March, and here they are. And I'll give them credit for being aggressive. This is very unusual for them to go out and do what they've done. And they've done it without creating any future risk of losing those draft picks so far or anybody else key to their future. But the question is, what do you expect out of a 41, soon-to-be 42-year-old quarterback? History suggests not much for guys who've done it. If you take Tom Brady away from all of this, who has been productive at age 42 in the NFL at quarterback? Was Drew Brees 42 when it happened? I don't know how old he was.
No, he wasn't very productive that final year either.
No, but that's my point. That's a tough thing to ask. Now, can he buck the odds? Do you think he will buck the odds?
I think he's got a possibility to throw about 25 touchdowns, and as long as he takes care of the ball, be able to take them to 10-7 and potentially a playoff win, yeah. Like, I think we should consider that Aaron Rodgers is a four-time MVP. He's a little bit built different than a lot of other players, even the Drew Breeses of the world. He's not Tom Brady, no. Nobody's trying to claim that he is. But he's also somebody who I think still has very good arm strength. So as long as he's protected, and that's going to fall on Broderick Jones and Troy Faltano to be able to do, if they can protect him, I think he's got a shot.
I think the offensive line is a concern, not so much the starters, although I do think Broderick Jones is going to be under the microscope, as he should be. This is his first time playing left tackle. That's the position he was born to play. And then you have someone who hasn't played a full season, although what we saw last year from him was encouraging. I think Troy Faltano will be just fine over there. But again, you got to go out and do it. Behind all of these guys, there's not much in terms of depth, at least not experienced depth. You know, you have Cook, who's been around forever. He's the backup left tackle, I think, at this point. Injuries always play a key when you're assessing what's going on here. But we're going to take a look at what we got from the Steelers position by position as we go along in this broadcast. Want to hear from you on that as well at 412-928-9370. But right now, let's go to the hotline, and we have somebody on there who wants to talk about trade possibilities.
Here is Rick. He's in Wisconsin.
Hey, Rick, what's up?
How you doing, Bob?
I'm good. How are you?
Nice to have you back.
Oh, hey, thank you. But I'm going to be gone again soon, so I have a little bit more vacation coming up until I. That's right, baby.
Yeah, I'll be tuning in a lot because Steelers camp is starting up, so I want to get all the lowdown. So, listen, you know, when I was a kid back in the 80s, and my favorite player was Tony Pena. And the day Tony Pena got traded, it totally broke my heart. But if you remember, for Tony Pena, they got Andy Van Slyke, Mike LeVayer, and Mike Dunn. And
yes.
I think also Don Slott. I think they also somehow acquired Don Slott.
That was a separate deal, though, I think. But you're right. Pena was a popular guy here. And sometimes in order to do it, you have to make that commitment to do it. And the return was big.
Right.
Van Slyke specific.
I think the Pirates are in that same spot. They're going to have to move someone big to get, you know, players like that. I don't know if the landscape is similar to what it was back then, but to get something, you got to give something.
So who are you saying? You're saying trade Keller then? That's your take on that, Rick?
Yeah, I'm actually thinking Keller and also Brian
Reynolds.
Brian Reynolds, yeah. I mean, you're gonna have to make a big move here, and the Pirates obviously need something. They need a change. They need to get rid of that losing mentality. And I think a lot of it is it's the players, but it's also the mentality. We need to bring some people in here that have a kind of a panache for winning instead of being comfortable with these losing.
Yeah, no, I get it. Reynolds to me with 5 years signed, you know, I don't They need offense. If you trade him, he's been one of your more productive offensive guys. So that's a little bit of a conundrum. But this all is predicated on what they need to make themselves a team that can contend while Paul Skeens is here. And because of that, I'm not trading Brian Reynolds. Instead, I'm trying to just – I'm going to go back to free agency. This should be a different offseason than it was last year. If Bob Nutting refuses to spend money this offseason, then you know, and I think most of us do suspect, but you will then know that profit is better than production. Because that's Absolutely. Pretty much what that says. You have a chance still with this guy here heading your rotation, once-in-a-lifetime kind of generational pitcher to do something with it. And if you don't, then you'll know his intentions.
Great. Hey, Bob, real quick before you go. That power team from the 90s, I was trying to remember, how did the Pirates get Bonilla? Was he a homegrown guy or was he a trade?
I think he was acquired. I got to double check on that. But I think once he was acquired, they developed him into what he was. I will check on that, Rick.
Thanks a lot, Bob.
All right, man. Appreciate it. 412-928-9370. Let's keep it rolling. By the way, Limits or Austin? I like to call you Austin.
I'm good with it, Bob. Austin? I'm good with it. You can mix it around, too, if you'd like.
I'll play a Joe Starkey. Limits, do you like my hat?
I do like your hat, Bob.
It's not Santa Claus, if you're watching on YouTube.
Is that a John Daly hat?
John Daly. It's a grip it, rip it, and now grip it and sip it. He is pushing a vodka, which is really good. It's one of those in a can, like Surfside. It's called Good Boy.
Good Boy.
Yeah.
Were you there with John Daly in Scotland on your trip?
No, he wasn't there. But I saw him the week before then, and... that product's pretty good, by the way, if you like those kind of drinks. You know?
I saw you send him a message about a shot you had. Golfed pretty well, huh, Bob?
I did golf pretty well. I'll talk more about that. Not that I want to spend too much time on it, but who we got on the line now?
Congratulations on all your success. Let's go to JD in Baldwin.
JD, what's up?
Bob, how are you? Welcome back from Scotland, chiming in on the Mitch Keller trade.
Yes, sir.
I, for one, would like to see Keller stay, but my concern is, and I'm sure other listeners are thinking the same thing, isn't Keller making like $15 million a year, which
I think 17.
Well, that's not big money for a lot of teams, but we've seen the Pirates do this before. I just hope that they're not going to shed that contract and trade him for whether it be prospects or maybe a bat that kind of looks like it would help the offense. That's my worry. I mean, I'd like to see other trades get made and Keller stay. I'm just afraid he's going to be the...
Here's the question, JD, and Limits. Both of you, like, if you look at this team, we believe they have pitching depth. Do we really know they have pitching depth? Or are we just suspecting that these guys are all going to turn out to be good players? Like, Mike Burrows has shown some things. I think Braxton Ashcraft has shown some things. You know, Oviedo's down there. Yeah, they got a lot of guys. But do you believe that depth will actually, come to the surface here when it plays in big-time baseball and be the kind of pitcher you want them to be? If you're sure of that... and they have to be sure of it if they're going to make a deal, then you trade Mitch Keller. If you're not sure of that, then you don't. Because you have Skeens, Keller. If you put Chandler into there with anybody else, you have, again, next year, a very formidable rotation that would help itself just to go out and spend some free agent money on bats. That's
right now, it's all potential, and that's hard to judge.
Yeah. All right, JD, thanks for the call. Do you you feel strongly about it? Because I don't in terms of, I think, potentially. Again, this word potential is one that I hate to use in baseball. We use it all the time because we've seen people come here and fail over and over again based on potential, but it never equals the production that you would expect from the potential.
That was a very difficult fine line for them because, sure, Barco might come up and be good, and Harrington in his short stretch wasn't that good, but he still has some potential. He's a Quinn Priester type of pitcher, and as you can see in Milwaukee now, Quinn Priester is pitching pretty well. So the talent is there as long as you find a way to be able to get it out of him. So they do have depth, yes, but I think, and I've been pretty firm on this, I think that we've overstated their depth a little bit because ultimately, if Keller goes, Heaney's going to go, and this team has stayed relatively healthy other than Jared Jones. Like Oviedo was hurt last year. He's still not back yet. Jones is going to miss half of next season. You trade from the very top of that depth, that's when you're really going to be able to see the effects.
Yeah, we'll find out. It's coming up in 10 days. Let's go out to Rob in West Mifflin, who joins us right now talking about Pirates and their deadline. The deadline is coming. Rob, what do you do?
Bob, listen, man. The bottom line is if everybody keeps saying that he doesn't want to win, you cannot trade Mitch Keller if you're trying to win. He's a proven arm. These guys are just question marks. They're question marks. Nobody, how many quality starts does any of those guys have? That's what I want to know. How many quality starts does Burrows have? Any of them.
Right. I mean, they're still a works in progress. I don't think there's any denying that. And that's what you have. So if you think it is going to blossom, then you'll probably make a trade. If you don't, I wouldn't.
I'm not a trade Mitch Keller, man. I'm just not going to do it. You got to go out and spend some money, get your bat, trade, package Bednar, IKF, put something together and get your bat. I'm not trading no starting pitching. I'm not going with no question. These guys are question marks down there. Nobody knows what they're going to do when they get in the major leagues.
Well, and there are plenty of examples, Rob, to support your argument. We've seen it from players that they've acquired here, and where are they? Are they even close to being up here? And the answer is no. We heard so much about Tamar Johnson. He wasn't a trade acquisition. He was a draft pick, but he seemed to have regressed here in the last 3 months. My point is, they're at a point with, and again, I preface this all by saying Paul Skeens is the centerpiece. You're trying to win before he leaves here. If you have any shot to do it, it's got to happen in the next 2 years. So everything that you do should be based on that. And if you trade Mitch Keller, you're hurting your starting pitching staff in the hopes that one of these guys becomes what you think he should become. But in the past, we've seen they don't become what you think they're going to become.
That's my point right there, man. Everybody, trade Mitch Keller and get you a bat. Come on, man. Are you serious?
Well, they should be in the driver's seat. Thanks, Rob, for that. Limits, I'll ask you this. Where do you think they can get the most in return for Mitch Keller? If they end up trading him, would it be now or would it be after the season when you have the full offseason to think about it?
I think it would be now because in season, and I compare it to Ricard Raquel a little bit, where now it seems like the Penguins are a little bit hands-off because they're not getting the return that they want. Teams are desperate in the middle of the season when they're in a pennant race.
The only thing about that is they also have people that they want and they're not willing to part with because they are in a pennant race.
Right.
So you may want somebody on their roster who's off limits now, but once the season is over, he may be on limits again, using limits as the word.
Yes. I just feel like that desperation is just such a factor. Like it was with the Archer trade. There's been so many trades where we've seen that have come down to the very end of the deadline where it was, we need that final piece to push us over the top. And if some team thinks that Mitch Keller is that guy and is willing to overpay, I think it's more likely now than it would be then.
Describe
just
overpay.
Reasons.
What would be overpay to you?
Well, they need to find a way to be able to get two bats out of this, I think.
Prospect bats who are number 5 and 7 in their food chain, right?
No.
You're talking about legitimate people who have been up here to some degree.
We're talking about either they've been up here for a year or so, similar to Horwitz, but with a higher profile than Spencer Horwitz, and probably another prospect that ranks in their top three in a highly regarded system. Like the Yankees system, they have like one top 100 guy. If you're a system that has no top 100 guys, it's completely different when you're taking a look at, well, this guy's organization one, this guy's organizational two, compared to like the Orioles who have had a very deep farm system or the Dodgers who have a very deep farm system, teams like that.
Yeah, those teams always do it right. They spend the money, but they still have deep farm systems, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's unbelievable.
And the Dodgers, look at it every year. Every year, their farm system is still up there in the top 10.
All right, getting back to Rick who asked about Bobby Bonilla. He was actually with the Mets, I think, at some point before. I'm not sure how it all worked. I got to go back and look at his history because he, I don't think he was here. He was the White Sox, maybe. I can't remember. I got to look back and see where he is. But once he got to Pittsburgh, that's where his career flourished. But he wasn't somebody who the Pirates drafted. 412-928-9370. How about we go one more before we go to break? Who do we got?
All right, let's go to John in Cranberry.
Hello, John. What's up?
Hey, Bob. How are you? So a little Bobby Bonilla history. So Bonilla was drafted by the Pirates, but then in Rule 5, the White Sox took him.
I knew it was the White Sox because the White Sox had him for a while, right?
Yeah, and then what happened was Sid Thrift, he wasn't happy in Chicago, so Sid Thrift got him back in a trade with Jose De Leon, and that's how he ended up on the Pirates. So a little bit of Bonilla. Has anyone
appreciate
on,
that.
Signed
thanks.
The greatest contract in baseball history.
Yeah, well, Rick DiPietro has the best in NHL history, too, where he's still getting paid.
So my quick thing, you mentioned Cherington. So we all know there's, everyone's screaming about Cherington, and I'm for him not coming back. But when I look at what he's done, you're right. The nucleus pitching is there, but I don't know if you guys have seen. Chandler has struggled. Harrington has struggled. There's not a lot. There's no guarantee these guys are going to pan out, number one. But my feeling is I really think they need to make a change, and I think they will. I think they're going to go to another GM. And Matt Arnold, is the example I want to use. You see Milwaukee's in first place now.
They won like 11 in a row, too. And they're doing it with a budget that should be where the Pirates are minimum.
That's what they need to find. They need somebody.
Well, the Pirates had a chance to hire Matt Arnold, didn't they?
It was between him and Ben.
Yeah.
And they took Ben. So that's the thing. But anyway.
But you also have to have an owner. Let's just preface this, as we all know. It doesn't matter. If you're Matt Arnold coming here and you're told you only have so much that you can spend, you may have the same outcome as Ben Cherington, although I think it might be a little bit different. GMs do matter in terms of player acquisition. You got to have a coaching staff that develops. But before any of that happens, you have to owner has to be willing to spend money when he has to spend money.
Yeah, I think the biggest disappointment with Ben, too, no international signings. Look at Jackson Churio. Look what the Brewers did. They committed to him early, even before he was good. That's the decisions you have to make in a small market. But thanks, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
All right, John, thank you for the Bonilla information. That's right. So Sid Thrift made a nice move. Yeah, I remember him with the White Sox, but I couldn't remember if he was drafted. So Pirates drafted him. Rule 5 claimed by Chicago, and then he goes back after and makes a deal, and then he comes here and things happen. And not only that, he was front and center to that success they had. It's a shame they didn't win a playoff series back then with all those 3 years.
That's hard to believe.
But that it was all different. The only way you can get in is win your division. And so all this wild card stuff didn't exist.
There were only two divisions.
Yeah, so you immediately go to, playoff there. If you win that series, you go to the – it's difficult to do. It was difficult to do, but they had a great unit. We are back talking about the Pirates at the trade deadline. Bob Pompiani along with Austin City Limits, who's in the hot seat today, producing, multitasking as Joe Starkey is away for the week, but he'll be back next week as well. 412-928-9370. Top of the hour, we're going to break down the Steelers, look at what they have, and ask the question, how effective can a 41, soon-to-be 42 quarterback can be? We look back at some of the history of people who have done it, what their results have been. Of course, Tom Brady is the guy who's accomplished the most since turning 40 into 45, but who did it before that? We'll get into that at 412-928-9370. Right now, let's go back to the hotline here. Also, we got Todd in Wexford who's been waiting for a while. What's up, Todd?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
We're good. What's going on?
Good. Nothing. Hey, I really would rather Pirates trade nobody, to be quite honest with you. In terms of the Kellers and the Reynolds and the Bednarz, because they're relatively young, and if you trade them, you're going nowhere. You're just going to set yourself back. It's not going to happen. Pirates have proven they haven't been able to draft, successfully. And i.e., when you draft, you had two overall number one picks. Paul Skeens, great pick. Henry Davis, horrible pick. You can't do stuff like that and expect to win. In that same draft, you could have got Jackson Merrill. Padres drafted him the 27th pick overall. That was much better use. And then people will talk about the Cardinals. Why are the Cardinals good? Because they go out and get, as you're saying, Bob, earlier in the show on free agents, they go out and draft, they sign players like Nolan Arenado, Paul Goldschmidt, Wilson Contreras, Sonny Gray, all good veteran players that were, not to say past their prime, but they got them probably in the early 30s, and they got 3-4 years. They mixed their good guys in there, and they're doing well.
Yeah,
and we don't develop.
It's a mix of everything, and you're right. And if the Pirates don't engage in free agents seriously, then you have to rely solely on your system, which has not been good. So you're of the mindset that you're not going to get any kind of return based on Ben Cherington's inability to show it previously, and so you're carrying that over into this trade deadline.
Exactly. And then they got to do something with, like, Jack Sawinski. I don't even know why. You find somebody else in the minors that could do something better than him. If they have nobody better than Jack Sawinski, he's never hit over .224 in the 4 years he's had at-bats in the majors. And then the next thing is O'Neill Cruz. If you strike out, for a guy that has his bat speed, striking out 122 times in 322 at-bats, are you kidding me?
See, like, that's the thing about Cruz that I was a little disappointed in this year. Thanks, Todd, for the call, too. We appreciate that. Is that here's a guy who has enormous ability on the bases to steal bases, but you got to get on base before that can happen. And he started the season like he was, more of a, put the ball in play kind of attempt, but the bat speed will take care of itself, right? It will. If he has that kind of bat speed, even if you just try to make contact, the ball is going to go a lot farther than the most. He needs to get on base more and utilize his tools that he has in the tool chest. He hasn't been able to do that other than the long ball. He started out so hot stealing bases. Where is he now? He hasn't done much of that in the last 2 months.
Nope. No, and that's just a huge part of it. Like the development and the acquisition of other players that they've found whether it be in the Musgrove trade, whether it be the Adam Frazier trade, trying to bank on Hoy Park, stuff like that.
Another name, Hoy Park.
Hoy Park. They think that they can be able to find a steal from somebody, bring him into their system, and they change. It's kind of like Tomlin with wide receivers when he drafts them. And ultimately, doesn't end up being the case. At least Tomlin has receivers that have talent. The talent is just not fully there for the Pirates, and they develop these guys.
Yeah, and, you know, that's the whole thing. Whatever, you know, you mentioned Quinn Priester, right? Quinn Priester was acquired for Nick York, who's still not up here. And at the time, it looked like he was going to be one of the guys. Again, this is the problem when you fall into the prospect game. Where, oh, look at this guy, what he's going to be able to do when he comes up here. Well, where is he? Why is he not here yet? And meanwhile, Quinn Priester's figured it out. I don't think they've changed a lot of what Quinn Priester's doing in Milwaukee. They just supported him in doing it and worked with it to fine-tune it more than change it. If you remember when they had Tyler Glasnow and traded him, they wanted him to become something he wasn't here.
Right.
When he went to Tampa, they said, no, you got a 99, 100-mile-an-hour fastball. Let's use that to your advantage.
Yeah, a lot of it is just about pitch usage and location and how you're attacking hitters and how you change the eye level of hitters as well. And that's something that's working really well for Priester now that ultimately it didn't work here and they didn't have the right messaging with them because the stuff was there, the location just wasn't. And I think a lot of that might be philosophy.
Yeah, it's the wrong philosophy. That's what's going on. They got to get better in that department, no question. Who's next on the hotline, Austin?
All right, let's go to Emmanuel in Carnegie.
Emmanuel, what's up?
Uh-oh. Thanks for taking my call. Oh, sorry, I dropped my phone.
A fumble. We had a fumble. This is on the day before Steelers training camp, and there's a fumble. You know how Mike Tomlin hates.
You can't be Rashard
Mendenhall, Emmanuel.
He hates
fumbles. You can't do that, Emmanuel.
I can't be. I can't cost us another Super Bowl. that being said, if I was the Pirates, I'll trade it. And anybody's on the trade and bought butt schemes. That's how it is. I agree with one of the callers earlier, even Reynolds. I put him on the trade.
Yeah, but aren't you concerned about what you're going to get in return? Let's say that he makes a trade for Mitch Keller, and it turns out to be similar to what they got in some of these other trades that he's made, which is to say nothing. Not
this is
much.
This is why I want to go with process. I want someone that has a little bit of a track record, someone that is young and has a track record. I think a change of scenery for some of these guys would be a good thing. And as in regards to the Steelers, I think we're not really focusing on the defense as much. 73-0 in the first quarters of all these playoff games. I think Rodgers is going to be good. But we need him to be great if the defense is lacking like they have in the last several playoff games. Thank you.
Yeah, I agree with that. If you take a look getting to the Steelers, and we'll talk more about that in the next hour here, but even with T.J. Watt signing, which kind of reduces his cap hit now in this season, the Steelers still will commit more money by far. This will be the fourth consecutive year limits that they are the top spending team on defense at almost $170 million. That's $20 million more than the next team, which is the Giants. And then after that, it's the Colts. Let me ask you something. When I say to you Steelers, Giants, Colts, best defense on paper, at least in terms of money, they haven't had anything to show for themselves in terms of playoff success.
Nope.
Which tells you a little bit about where some of this other money should be going.
And think about the last time that they were good and the last time that they were in the playoffs and winning playoff games. It was Ben, A.B., Le'Veon, Martavis Bryant, experienced and paid offensive line with Pouncey, DeCastro, Ramon Foster, Villanueva, Gilbert. They invested significantly on offense, partly because they drafted better on offense and had players that they wanted to build around and be able to pay. But that's clearly the key in this NFL, Bob, where it's a pass-happy league, where you win on the offensive side of the ball. Kansas City's done it. The Eagles did it. Yeah, they still had good defenses, but they were younger. They were inexpensive. And they developed well where they spent more money on offense because defense wins championships. Now only happens not in a blue moon, but a lot rarer than offensive spending and offensive philosophy.
Yeah. Kansas City's done it very interestingly by not putting a lot of big time money. Chris Jones was the exception when he was there, and you know, when he was up for a deal, they paid that. But generally speaking, they get some young guys and they put them in a scheme that works, and Spagnuolo has them working well. And they dedicate a lot of their time to offensive players and money there. So you can do it a lot of different ways. And I'm not going to say defense doesn't win. If you have a really good defense, you can ride that, especially in a playoff game if your offense is capable of scoring more points. Now, the Steelers have changed their offense around radically here in the last 2 years. But that's also made possible because they missed on their one pick that they thought would change the quarterback position. When you miss on those picks, you know, just like we were talking about with the Pirates, you end up trying to get the same draft pick or whatever to come in and do the job that you shouldn't have had done if you did it right. If they had gotten the right quarterback when they took Kenny Pickett, and maybe there was none available in that draft. Maybe they should have not done that at that time. But when you keep chasing and you don't have it, you're going to keep chasing. I've never seen them ever back-to-back years have complete change in their quarterback room. Six different quarterbacks. And now here they are. And we know this is going to be it for Aaron Rodgers. And then next year they're going to go through this exercise of trying to find the one that they hope they can ride with. However, if it doesn't work out, you know, now you're just doing the same thing over and over again.
Well, if it does not work out, it might end up being to their benefit getting closer to a high draft pick for a quarterback too. So that's why I think, like, obviously they're all in as they can be this year, because they didn't give up significant assets for the future to be able to sell out for this year. Like, clearly they're going for it with Rodgers, with Darius Slay before those guys ultimately retire, Ramsey, stuff like that, re-signing Watt. But it still leaves open the possibility that next year they can just completely reset, do a whole 180, do a whole 360 based on basically what they did last year. Wilson and Fields to Rodgers. They did a full 180. They have a chance to do so again to go to a rookie quarterback as long as they get it right this time.
If you get the rookie quarterback right, then you have so much more money to spend, so many things you can tackle as opposed to try to figure out the quarterback position. It's actually a benefit if you do it the right way because you can stack your roster with other players. 412-928-9370. One more call before we take the break here. And who would that be, Austin?
All right, let's go to Craig. He's on the road.
On the road again for Mr. Craig. What's up?
Yeah, I am. I'm on 28 right now. When Charrington came here, he was stuck with their Latin American scout. The chief scout in Latin America was Rene Gallo, and Rene was ripping them off. He was pumping up prospects that had no talent and paying and collecting big fees, which he split with the family. They got rid of Rene about two or three years ago, and they've done much better since. They sent two guys to the Futures game at the All-Star game, and one was this Merlin Valdez, who's one of their signings. They've got a big left-handed hitting outfielder in the very low minors named Edward Florentino. And, you know, he's 6'4 and can run and hits the ball a long, long way. They have a catcher in Altoona named Omar Alfonso. Now, he was an international signing, but his father played in the major leagues for a long time. And he's a left-handed power-hitting catcher. Okay. So,
but your point is what?
Charrington is slowly fixing the organization. You know, he should have done it from day one. But, you know, a major league organization is a huge operation. And, you know, you need to have people around that you can trust. And he took it on faith that the people that were there were trustworthy, and they weren't. They brought in a pitching development coordinator from the Rays several years ago, and all of a sudden they're turning out pitchers like crazy. And, you know, now they need to do that with, you know, a hitter.
Well, clearly they need, and thanks for the call, man. I appreciate you driving on 28 and taking time to call, but they certainly need to develop better. They're not doing it. I'm not sure the root cause of it, why it happens. There are a lot of people involved in this, but they have to develop the people they have. Either that, or it's just they're not good at identifying talent. And if you look back over the years, you can make that case as well. They've drafted some players who are not even in this organization anymore, as opposed to players who have thrived in other parts of Major League Baseball.
Was he trying to advocate to keep the GM around because he's starting to build up the international system better?
It sounds that way, but that's why, you know. What do you think about that, by the way? Do you think they've made a decision on him one way or the other?
I think that they have come pretty close to it, I would imagine. And that, you know, why they haven't done it now, though, it gives me some pause. Maybe they just don't want to completely change up the entire structure of the organization by getting rid of the general manager now, which would, like, it's easier to get rid of the manager.
Okay, so, fine, but still, at some point, it goes beyond the manager. It's about the talent the manager has to utilize. And so I ask this question to you, and I think it's going to be an interesting one. If they retain Ben Charrington, all right, then you know Don Kelly will be the manager.
Yeah.
If they don't, should the new GM have every right to come in and say, look, I have my own ideas of who I want here. I have my own ideas who I want to be my scouting director, all of it. He should get a clean slate on this, or do you think the Pirates may say to him, well, that's fine, except you're keeping Don Kelly.
No, no, the Pirates should not say that.
How about if they do?
That should not be a mandate. Then the new general manager should have a choice whether to come here or not, whether he wants to. That shouldn't handicap the new general manager, considering he should be able to determine his own guy at manager. Like, this is not Kyle Dubas inheriting Mike Sullivan, who won two cups. This is Donnie Kelly, who has a 8-game under 500 record over the course of his managerial tenure. Like, I like Donnie Kelly. Don't get me wrong. I think he's made some good decisions. I still want to see more from him.
Right.
But I think that if you can get an experienced manager, again, Francona would have been my pick. If you can get a similar type of guy like that, that can mold young players, but that's been around for a while and can create a culture, because they haven't had a culture in 6 years, longer than that, dating back to, I mean, the last great culture they had on this team was those 14, 15 teams. You know, 13, 14, 15, maybe a couple years after that, it lingered over. They need somebody that can set a culture, define what this team is going to be, and get the best out of young players. And if they can find somebody better than Don Kelly to do that, they should.
This is why I don't like to react to, one way or the other as this season goes on. It's 162 is a lot. Bob Nightingale came out with a tweet after Don Kelly had won six in a row and his team went on a streak, saying that he should be in consideration for manager of the year. And when I saw that, I said, really? That soon you're going to make? And they immediately then lost six in a row. It takes time.
Very premature.
And while I would understand, I think Donnie Kelly could be an asset to an organization.
Yeah, no doubt.
I also think that that manager, general manager coming in, should have the right. If you're being told you got to keep him around, fine. But he doesn't have to be my manager. I could use him in other roles. And if he doesn't want to hang around for that, that's up to him. But I think that's going to be part of the conversation moving forward if there's a change at the helm.